Hello and welcome to the officially unofficial podcast for American Horror Story, the American Horror Story podcast by Bald Move. I got that reversed. It's been a long night. We might get into that later. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And we're talking about, of course, season 7, the cult season, episode 708, Winter of Our Discontent.
Ooh, what did you think of the episode?
I mean, I don't even know anymore. Like, I was really entertained by the cult sex scene.
Yeah.
Like,
which one?
The one where he's doing the anointing and the
I swear.
I swear by, was it All for One?
Yeah.
It feels like he's starting to troll his own members, or we're supposed to understand that he's losing his mind. Like, I don't know. I also really enjoyed the, like, fundamentalist Christian Hell House.
Yeah.
Which we can talk about, because I've from Indiana, there were some around locally every year. They started, like, I feel like they started, like, 15, 20 years ago.
Maybe
that's just when I started paying attention to them. But no, there's a couple things I liked. There's a lot of things I didn't like and didn't make sense. But that's American Horror Story. What'd you think, Cecily?
I liked this episode a whole lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining and crazy and ridiculous. But, you know, the pieces are coming together. You know, just as prophesied, this is about the time where the wheels start spinning off the rails. Is that how that metaphor goes?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, things stop making sense. And, you know, I'm here for it.
I kind of shocked, honestly shocked about Dr. Vincent being, I guess, a good guy, defined as a guy who wants to stuff his dead parents in a room instead of report them as a murder-suicide.
Right.
But
I told you, I told every one of
you,
I don't think he was in on it.
Yeah, you did. I don't know what evidence you had on that other than, you know, Ryan Murphy writing the show. But so do you want to talk? You just want to talk stuff in general? Or you want to get right to the episode?
Let's get right into it.
Oh, actually, I have an honest to God piece of housekeeping. Don't usually have these for these episodes.
Interesting.
But
editor's note.
Cecily and I recorded what we're calling the first annual Cinema Spooktacular.
Cinematic Spooktacular.
We've had a tradition for, these 5 years or so, of watching scary movies during the month of October. I know. Shockingly original. and we watched about nine, I think. 8 or 9 movies, and we did a podcast about them. We're still watching scary movies, but these are the ones we had so far going into the week of Halloween. It's on baldmove.com. If you like Cecily and I talking about American Horror Story, I think you'll like our movie recommendations. It's all spoiler-free, too.
Yep, and what we hope to be an annual tradition.
It will be an annual, unless the only thing that can stop us is death or nasty divorce. I think those are all 5-10 years in the future.
So if it's like
minimum.
An amicable divorce, we'll still do it?
Yeah, I could see us doing the Dan and Aaron Harmon thing.
Okay.
Okay, that's all the housekeeping I wanted to talk about. Let us move on. So the dudes of Kai march out of the Kai compound while his brother, Dr. Vincent, goes up to greet him. They have this discussion of Kai being afraid he'd be ashamed of him versus Vincent professing pride and what he's doing and that it's awesome and that he thinks with a few modifications you could go national. He wants to help with a social media campaign. I don't know why I'm putting so much weird emphasis on words, but
well, here's the thing in this scene. I think I can't tell. Dr. Vincent doesn't seem genuine.
He doesn't seem like a genuine person, though.
No, I think in this scene, especially for me, but I mean, it ultimately doesn't matter, but I just didn't know what his play was there.
Yeah.
Is he coming to him after realizing that Kai is the cult leader who's been killing people?
Hmm.
And he's trying to keep him on his good side and play the game? Or does he realize later when he goes to Allie? I don't know.
I think he's already in on him. He just wants to see kind of how far, you know, the rabbit hole is going and whether he needs to have him arrested or committed. I think that's what he's trying to wrestle with in this episode. And then Kai pulls him in for a hug and you think that Vincent has bamboozled him. And then he says just one thing, call me councilman from now on.
Oh.
Which kind of puts Vincent. This is kind of a theme that Kai's is putting people in their places this episode. So Ivy's over at the butchery, and she's reduced to being a waitress serving up the blue shirts. And they have
all
a whole
the
bunch.
All the women have, really.
Huh?
I said all the women have, really.
Yeah. I was getting to that. They all say a bunch of sexist shit about her ass and whether she would be sexier if she smiled. Ivy grabs a knife to go at him, but she's stopped by her sister, Winter. Ivy steams into the kitchen saying, "How did this handmade shit happen?" Is that just a generic reference, or does she get an advanced copy of Handmaid's Tale?
Oh, it's very much a Handmaid's Tale reference.
I bet she would. She's probably read the original. Was it Margaret
Atwood?
Atwood. So she probably is well versed in all that. And Bev said, "I don't see how 48 hours ago we were going to take down the patriarchy." And
neither do we, Bev.
Man, that's the God honest truth. Like, I honestly don't understand. The end of last episode, I thought we were going to see some kind of giant mind fuck with Bebe working with Kai Kai, mm-hmm. and we get nothing. Like, the women showed up, there's a bunch of blue shirts, and they're like, heads down, start cooking and buttering rolls.
Right, it's like nothing ever happened. You'd think that if they were going to kill Harrison, that they'd have some greater plan to carry forward after that, but they
right.
don't seem to.
And no one... Was there an official story for what happened to Harrison? Did someone told Kai? Or
I mean, I think Beverly on TV blames it on a serial killer.
Well, right, but Kai, that's a statement to Kai. Like, I mean, I felt like that was a statement because Kai knows that Beverly's working for him and Beverly is reporting breathlessly another assassination and attacking his security plan. Like, that never really was answered.
I mean, it was answered in that Kai was watching Beverly report about it on TV.
Yeah.
And she pointedly says he was covered in scum in the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kai heavy-handedly looks mm-hmm. at the scum manifesto on the table in front of him and he puts the pieces together. So
mm-hmm.
that was it. They were threatening him, but he ultimately won. Because
maybe that's why they're on kitchen duties. He's a preemptively, this is like, you know, dunce work.
Yeah.
But she goes, "Well, I'll tell you why. You don't know what happened at that meeting last night." And we had a flashback to the meeting last night where Kai holds a vote on employing a private security firm. One councilman stands opposed, but wavers when Kai threatens the safety of his daughters. And that's crazy, man.
You can just openly threaten someone in a council meeting.
You know, I bet you could. Like, I don't know what would take, like, I don't know. In some of these states, when a governor would, like, move in the National Guard if you had some, like, jackbooted thugs take over a city council. Like, we'll get to more of that later. But, you know, it's like, I think it was startling the first Charlottesville kerfuffle,
mm-hmm.
if I can call Nazis openly marching through our streets with torches a kerfuffle, is the police response the next day when they question, like, how did these, like, and some of these guys were heavily armed with, like, body armor and rifles and whatnot, and the police, like, oh, it's just they had so much firepower. We're just like,
right.
I'm like, oh, so you moved the SWAT teams with the MRAPs and the fucking tanks when it's a bunch of protesters throwing bottles, but as soon as people show up with, like, this is...
Right, if it were a women's league... With all of those guns, it probably would have been broken up.
Black Lives Matter, and I'm like, and it's getting scary because, like, I've been participating, you know, Richard Spencer, this has all been, I guess, quashed because the University of Cincinnati rescinded the invitation, but he was invited to speak at the campus here in Cincinnati, and there is this, you know, grassroots group, they're, like, organizing a protest against them. And this was the weekend after the shooting. There was where, like, the Nazis actually stepped it up and shot somebody. And they were saying that security is going to be provided, and they listed these two left-wing gun organizations, like some kind of
Red Dead Redemption?
No, some kind of Redneck Revolution, and there's some other one. And I'm like, what's going to happen when you've got
better.
Two bands of private security forces with semi-automatic rifles and body armor? Like, I am 1,000% less likely to go demonstrate now because, shit, I'm a dad, I'm a small business owner, I'm a husband to a lovely lady. I don't want to get shot. And I'm just saying, like, what is going to be the answer to this? Like, I get it. We have a right to peacefully protest. I can wrap my head around the whole like argument for open carry with the nation's gun laws as they are. But you put those two together and it's kind of fucking scary. And you think like what these cops would do, like I said, if the Black Lives Matter showed up armed, if the Women's League showed up armed, if the Black Panthers showed up armed, I don't think they would, the police would just be like, well, streets are theirs.
Too many guns. Can't do anything.
You gotta wait till the tiki torches burn out.
Right.
Anyway, that's the thing about American Horror Story. Like, it's not scarier than what's actually going on this season.
Right.
Okay. So we get back from this horrific, show. And Bev says that the blue shirts are all subservient to Kai, and if they cut the head off the snake, they can win. Winter says, that's suicide, not just for us, but for the movement. This is all part of Kai's larger plan. And Bev takes her down a notch, saying, if you think your big brother's going to spare you, he doesn't give a shit about you. And then she says, I'll see your flashback and raise you another one. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for him. And we have a flashback to Halloween 2 years ago. They say they're trolling social justice warrior websites, but all the websites, when I paused it and looked like very conservative, fundamental Christian. Like, it's not a bunch of people talking about women's reproductive health and then these guys coming in with, you know, their bullshit. It's like, it's literally everyone in that chat room is talking the Lord, and they're just trying to one-up each other.
Right. I feel like that's part of, that was their troll in their mind, was to pretend to be one of these people and to get them all fired up and say some really incendiary shit like they were.
Well, I wonder if that's like part of his, I mean, I know part of this is like how it seems like some of the problem is you have a bunch of young people that get online and they start saying N-bomb, and it's funny because it's transgressive and it's just ironic and it's all just memes, dude. And, like, you leave that young person on there for 2 years, and they just start believing it. It's like you open up your mind a little bit of crack to that, and then suddenly, like, oh, you went from ironically being racist to actually being racist.
I think that's what happened at Kai when he got on the red pill subreddit.
Right. Right. You go from... You know, posting Pepe's with Nazi armbands to actually marching with a Nazi armband. It's crazy.
Right.
But they get invited once they get on this dark website by this private message from Pastor Charles to go to Judgment House or something like that.
Judgment House. That's right.
So the Judgment House essentially is like one of those fundamentalist Christian haunted houses, but like for real. And I mean, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh man, it's going to be exciting because I'll get to explain like that these are a real thing and like what they're like, because you know, I'm from a part of a country that they're super popular. But I felt like the best thing you can say is like it's essentially exactly like this house, only it's fake. They're not actually killing people. And
really, they do all that stuff?
Yeah.
Gross.
Like, I've seen one that they have, like, they really hit that abortion shit and, of course, the sodomite stuff and all that. And, like, you know, then you get to see a room that looks like hell and what are you going to do? And
yeah.
I know it's pretty fucked up. But they find, you know, they go through this nursery room covered in blood with, you know, baby dolls and soaked in red and little garbage bags hanging from the nursery stuff to a woman who's forcibly had an abortion and she's bleeding to death, except for she's, you know, actually been tortured by this guy. And then they go to a man who's been giving all of the drugs and like some kind of Seven knockoff, and then there's a guy who's the Pastor Charles claims is a sodomite strapped to a chair. It's got some kind of cross shaped blade execution system, and I kind of see the appeal of Kai because he's kind of a man of action here, where he's like, this is fucked up. This is people. We're going to help these people, and he sends his sister for help. She gets cornered by Pastor Charles. Kai starts freeing everybody upstairs, and then just as Pastor Charles is starting to really menace Winter, he comes down with a fire poker and beats him down, then straps him to a chair, and he gives this weird, like, this is it's probably for effect, where he talks about, like, this woman was at a Planned Parenthood clinic for a UTI, And this man was at a sobriety meeting trying to get sober, and this man wasn't a gay guy at all. He was just volunteering to help AIDS victims. And I'm like,
doesn't that kind of defeat the point of all of these people who were never doing anything wrong, really?
Right.
Are being falsely punished?
It reminded me a lot of like this Canadian guy who's running for, he ran for the prime minister position, and he's a Sikh. And there's a famous video went around a couple months ago where this woman, he was having this rally, and she gets right up in his face, starts screaming, and he's like, "You support Sharia law?" And like, you know, he's sitting there in a turban, because that's what, you know, it's like their whole religious garb. They got this whole thing. It's got, you know, this, this comb and his turban and his knife and his that's part of their the devotion. And he's like, you know, the whole time very calm, and's like, "Yeah, I hear you, and I love you, and our movement is about love." And he's not like engaging in the merits. And a lot of people afterwards were like, "Why didn't you just say, 'I'm not a Muslim, you dumb bitch. I'm a Sikh.'" And he's like, because the problem with her is not that she hated me because I like she falsely hated me because of the wrong. The problem with her is she's hating people because of their religion.
Right.
And I thought that's the kind of thing where like Kai is like, "Don't you feel stupid because you killed these people for nothing?" And like, well, what would you do if it was an actual woman who was getting a legal abortion, or a man who was a homosexual, or
right? Would it have been okay then?
Yeah, and I don't think Kai said that, but it's kind of the message that was delivered.
Right.
Anyway,
so they killed Pastor Charles for coveting Jesse's girl.
What?
That was Rick Springfield.
Yeah. Oh, no shit?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he looked familiar.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. I'm just saying it could have been a good role for Russell Edgington, too.
I'm just saying. Dennis O'Hara can show up anytime now.
He can. I just don't know if he will. Anyway, the other thing is, like, I guess everyone's cool with that, and no one informed the authorities, and that house just, like, fell into disrepair, and no one showed up to investigate the murder house, and...
You know what? I don't think that many people are checking in on this guy to begin with. But
the bills he needs to pay?
Of them have blood and DNA all over the places where they were.
Right.
And also, you know, if you just had, I don't know what happened to that woman. Obviously, it wasn't an abortion, but she was covered in blood.
Uh-huh.
She got messed up.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy was on all of the drugs.
Yeah.
And you guys are just going to like stand around and listen to Kai... monologue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Strange.
She says that everything changed after that night, which is like, this is the third thing that's happened to Kai where everything changed him.
Right.
You know, and I'm starting to think that he's lying. Like, we've seen Kai lie about the details of his
That what we know for sure now is that both Winter and Kai have lied about a lot of things.
Yeah, and
that we can rely on them to not tell the truth.
Yeah, there's a lot of unreliable narration going on, and I'm sure it'll be cleared up in the flashback in a few weeks. But for now, she says he's addicted to Adderall and the dark web, and he just wanted to burn everything down and build a new world because he just really wanted to save people, but he realized it wasn't possible in the old world order. And he dyed his hair blue, which is the international symbol for being crazy, as he looks at his wife who just dyed the tips of her hair blue.
God damn it, I am crazy.
It's starting. It's starting! Ah! It's House of Judgment right here in our studio. Bev says, "All right, fine. If you think you can put him on the path of the righteous, great. But at the end of the week, I'm coming for your brother."
Okay.
I don't think you can he's more like the Titanic. If you're going to turn him around, it's going to take a few nautical sea miles.
Right.
It's not going to be like a half-week project. Anyway, Winter then takes her concerns to Kai, and he's like, "Oh, I get it. The women are unhappy with their position. Submit to the pinky power." So they lock pinkies, and he asks her if she loves him, and will she always be loyal to me? And she says, "You make it so hard sometimes, but yes." And Kai sobs and breaks the pinky power and says, "I just love you so much." Now, I think it's interesting he says all this outside of the pinky.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to detect a pattern. Like, when he broke down with Beverly and told her that bullshit story, also broke the pinky. Like, I feel like the Kai really does believe in this pinky shit. He holds it sacrosanct. So anytime he breaks it, it's a tell. that he's manipulating people.
Wow. You've really put a lot of faith in this show.
And he explains that your true purpose will be revealed as the mother of our Messiah baby. And she says, won't that be incest? And she goes, oh, no, no, no.
That was her biggest problem.
Well, I mean, that's the one she thought she could, like, maybe make headway. And he goes, oh, no, we're actually going to use Samuels as the instrument of our union. As he enters you, I will enter him. Using him essentially like a human condom.
All right. Whatever.
Interesting concept. Vincent then confronts Allie at her home. And he reveals that Kai and Winter are his kin. And Allie goes ballistic, as she's totally entitled to. And she starts hurling accusations at him. Like, this is how he did it. He figured all my phobias because you fed him all this information. And Vincent says, no, no, Kai broke into his office. A little bit of an illustrative flashback there.
How does he know that?
I don't think he does. I think this is a little, maybe some unreliable narration.
But here's
the
thing. I think if I were those two in that position, I would more likely believe or conclude that Ivy was the one feeding him information all along.
I mean, I think it's fair for Allie to make the assumption that they're in league when she sees that they're, like, miraculously all related. Like, and oh my God, that you're my babysitter that stole my wife as your sister. Like, it does look orchestrated.
Okay, I misspoke. I think that Dr. Vincent should probably believe it was Ivy that did it instead of Kai breaking into his office. Okay. But, I mean, how would Kai know that he was seeing Allie through Ivy? Also, why was he playing with the clown and the happy face buttons that one time when he made the very creepy phone call?
It's a red herring, I guess. That's all it can be. But he says, look, I know how bad it looks, but I promise you I'm going to put you back together with your son. I'll have him either committed or prosecuted, speaking about Kai here. It's interesting because I think Allie at this point decides to fuck Vincent because she doesn't believe him and she wants to put her fate into her own hands. No, it's actually Allie's turning the corner to rationality. Whether you believe that or not is another matter, but that's what the show is having. Like, you know, she actually says that she's cured later on in an episode.
Okay.
Then we see Samuels and Winter. And they're all wearing these flowing white robes.
70s style.
And Kai steps in.
David Koresh.
And announces it's the time of the anointing. And he plays All for One, I Swear. Winter remarks.
Which is a great song choice.
She remarks, I can't believe I was at the Winter's or the Women's March 3 months ago. We can't either. We can't either, Winter. He says, this is a holy space. And this is now a holy song. He says, we're going to discard our garments and burn them after the ceremony. This is a sacred copulation. He puts some kind of essential oil on Winter's head. Presumably this is the anointing. Then he just dumps some bunch of that shit on Samuel's dick and commands him to mount her. And he says, I can't get it up. And he goes, well, it's not, Kai says it's not sex. It's a spiritual journey. And the whole time he's reassuring Samuel, he's like making the universal jerk, like he's jerking off right below camera.
Right.
And Winter taps out, says, this is too weird even for you. And he goes, no, it's a holy ritual. And she's like, that you made up this afternoon. And she gets in trouble, which we'll get to here in a minute.
It very much seems like the rape of two people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Samuel's going along with it, but, like, it's a cult thing.
Right. He doesn't mind having sex with Kai, but he also has to simultaneously have sex with Winter and also a woman.
That he doesn't want to do.
And the logistics of this seem very much Handmaid's Tale, you know?
Yeah, and, like, I mean, I guess if you're a cult leader, I mean, I don't know. Like, it seems like the more, like powerful people, if you look hard enough, tend to have these really weird appetites. I don't know if it's because, like, power and money attract kind of borderline psychopaths, or if no one tells you no long enough and people cover for you for long enough that you just, like, start getting weird with shit. I don't know if there's, like, no, like it's kind of scary about humanity. Maybe that secretly we don't have a governor internally that would keeps us on the, like, it's kind of like a collective thing, and once someone gets out of that orbit, it just gets, like, fucking depraved. I don't know. Yeah. But it's weird shit. The All for One thing especially. That's like the that was the weirdest thing that was going on in that room. Not really, but
the iceware.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Kai's, I feel like just fucking with him.
Absolutely.
Like, do you think that he? That's what I guess I was trying to think. Like, is this showing how crazy he is, or is he just fucking with people to see how far he can push them?
Said it before and I'll say it again. Chaos theory. I think he's just making shit up along as he goes, and whatever
what
people
does it
buy
him?
Into.
What is it with these two people particularly? What does this do? It demonstrates that Winter won't let him have some weird remote incestual by one remove relationship with her.
I just don't think there's a plan. I think the plan right then was to make a baby.
So you're talking about at the writing room level, there's just no plan.
Any level.
All right.
Winter doesn't have a plan. She doesn't have any clear motives.
So somehow, and it's not clear to me how, Allie extended an invitation to Kai over for Manwich Night. It's not clear to me how she reached out to him. It's not clear to me why he would decide to show up, but he shows up with a bunch of his goons. Allie hides a knife in her apron, which I don't even know why they showed it, because nothing even came close to knife action. He says, keep your hands where I can see them, and Speedwagon over here will taste my food. She drops on him that your brother is trying to get you committed. He kind of half-heartedly resists the idea for a bit, but then she explains that you did the one thing my wife or your brother and all the meds in the world couldn't do. You cured me of my phobias. I'm not afraid of anything anymore. And then
almost as if it was in her head the whole time.
He eats her manwich. He eats it up. And that's it. And she makes fun of Speedwagon by calling him Aerosmith. That was pretty funny.
Who do you think Allie's new neighbors are going to be?
I don't think they'll have one. Like, if he introduces new neighbors with three episodes to go, what the hell?
I don't know. It's just a fun question for me more than anything.
Oh.
Harrison and Meadow, like, basically got that house for a cheap steal, and now it's vacant again. Two families have died within, like, 3 months or however long it's
been. That's called radioactive in realtor terms. So we did next see Winter in an orange suit and a dunce cap picking up trash.
No. She's throwing the trash down.
We find that out later that she's dispersing the trash because Kai doesn't believe in global warming. And that's not how this works. That's how any of this works. But whatever. Also, I don't give a shit if the whole town's under your spell. Like, people would snap a picture of that and it would go viral.
Mm-hmm.
And people would be asking questions about, like, the fact that this is happening at this small town in Michigan and no one, I mean, I hope they reveal that, like, Kai has got some high-level dark web influence at the governor's office or something, because how the fuck is all this crazy shit being kept under wraps and not being discussed?
Well, he does have that one detective on the police force under his belt.
Right. I forgot. He's holding it all down
across
the nation.
All you need is one.
She gives him, or he gives her, some gruel to eat and tells her there's another bag of trash to throw around in the trunk. And she calls him on his hypocrisy via flashback. So Kai is on the corner writing prescriptions for Adderall to teenagers on using his brother Dr. Vincent's prescription pad. Samuel comes and threatens him to arrest him, or he can work for him at the 70-30 split.
And blowjobs on tap.
I thought the suck my dick was more of a, like, something that you would just say for effect. I don't think he's gotten to, like, it seems like the idea of a man having sex with him at this stage is kind of abhorrent. He's a deeply, deeply closeted in denial gay man.
I don't know. That's not the read I got.
All right. Well, you're not alone, because there's actually a piece of feedback on that, so we can discuss it then. So Kai has to take his cut over on a weekly basis. He shows up at the guy's house and lets himself in, and he's starting to get intimate with a woman in the bedroom, and we find out that Samuel collects Nazi paraphernalia.
Because why not?
Yeah. So this woman runs from the bedroom screaming, saying, "This guy's a psycho. He can't get it up unless he's choking you." And Samuel explains.
Would you be more disturbed in that moment to come out and find a man with blue hair is wandering around the house where you were just having sex? Like, oh my God, I got to get out of here, or these men are going to kill me. It's been a setup. It's creepy.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I don't know.
It's pretty fucking weird, but this is a woman who came into
sex position.
came into Ryan Lochte's house and saw the Nazi sex dungeon and's like, you know what? I'm going to give him a chance. He's awfully cute.
Okay, that's fair.
So he goes, hey, I can get any woman I want. And Kai's like, hey, it's not the women that's the problem, or it is the women that's the problem, because they make you weak. They take your power. You need a man because you're fucking a man and they don't take your power. They shoot you full of power.
Yeah.
And it's essentially kind of like a tantric sex, only it's like, I don't know, a Mobius strip of dicks and buttholes. And she explains, and Samuels interrupts her and says, well, that's why I follow the rules, because Vince, you know, because Kai's never steered me wrong. And she goes, dude, you're gay. And then he tries to rape her to make a point. She takes his gun. Quotes Valerie Solanas, and then blows his head off.
Dun, dun, dun.
She says, I should have fought back when Hillary lost, but now it's too late for me and for you, and blows his head off.
But it doesn't matter, because nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
Until the next person tries to rape her, and she kills them and blames someone else.
Well, I mean,
or
the
whatever.
The kind of social change that they're trying to engineer is essentially destroy civilization and you have to rebuild it from the ashes. Like it's like the French Revolution only 1,000 times. Like any kind of revolution in a first world country is going to just lead to massive fucking chaos and loss of life and standards of living.
If you're gonna
tear, we're just too fucking connected to each other.
I mean, maybe I haven't lived through enough revolutions, but I'm just confused about how the classes structure works in a revolution that you're trying to when you're trying to tear down a civilization.
It doesn't.
So why are women required to cook and feed these men?
Because
and be the bearer of messiahs.
Because you go back to brute force, and men have the kind of monopoly on that. You know, brute force and aggression.
I ain't buying.
I mean, why don't you buy it?
Besides all of the obvious reasons.
Well, break it down for me.
I wasn't prepared to defend that statement.
Violent revolutions, I feel like it's pretty standard that women, children, and elderly get it worse. And then, like, any kind of minority or thing on top of that is another kind of, like, shit modifier that you're going to get.
But they haven't even come close to tearing anything down.
Uh-huh.
Right now, they've just taken over a shitty restaurant.
Oh, I thought you were saying in general, with like if this went like national or global, what would happen?
Well, sure, but I think the oppression of women doesn't really help your cause, because that's just another kind of structure.
But I mean, the good question is, what does Kai actually believe? Because
question is, what does Winter believe? Why is she going along with this, but also having her own, you know, sub-revolution against the revolution? Like, obviously, she's not buying into it either.
No.
Except when she is.
And I was going to say, I think that she sincerely believes that Kai can bring about a new world order that's going to fix all these things, but things might have to get really, really bad.
So why did she join the women's, the scum?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't understand. She has no clear motives.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think that her clear motive is she wants to be a badass, but she's really a follower, and she has way too much faith in Kai because of this flashback scenario where he essentially saved her and the day in a way that she herself believes that she would have been a dead person if he wasn't there. So she's like just really taking all that stuff to the bank and hasn't really caught up with the fact that Kai is some sort of addicted to methamphetamines crazy person now. Or that she thinks he has a plan, and I don't know that he does. I don't know. Like, I feel like this is all going heaven's gate, it seems like, with a fucking hurry.
Right.
And who's going to, it's before it goes national or even state, it's going to, like, burn out because of all the insane things we're talking about.
Right. I mean, if it ends up that way, then fine. That would make the most sense.
Right. It kind of reminds me, wasn't there an episode of True Blood or a season of True Blood where like everyone in Bon Toms went nuts?
Yeah, the Maynard season?
Yeah, and there's like kind of like we talked about that there was like this bubble of ignorance from the outside world, and then like when like the finally the outside world and everybody's gonna like, you know, stunned. There's another like an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer where everyone lost the ability to speak. Like, I mean, it's just kind of like it's. I guess you got to go with this little pocket reality that no one knows about on the outside world.
All right.
Maybe there'll be maybe in the last episode there'll be, you know, tanks rolling in to this smoking remains of this little weird suburban urban rural community, and everybody can cluck their teeth and cluck their tongues and be aghast at it all. All
right.
So Kai has kidnapped Vincent and Beverly, and he says this is a blatant betrayal. they brought the full clown regalia out. He goes to Vincent and makes him do the pinky power thing and says that no matter what we did, all would be forgiven if we tell the truth. He unties his hands, extends his pinky. Vincent locks with them, and then he shears Vincent's pinky off with a pruning shear. And then Kai screams because, you know, Evan Peters just hasn't gotten enough screaming this season.
No, he hasn't. He got like, a good one in.
It's so funny because I feel like that this season would be good for Evan Peters screaming. Like, they should have taken Evan Peters from Freak Show and that level of screaming and put it into this, like, stark raving mad season.
Yeah.
But they're not. And he stabs Vincent to death, much to Winter's horror. I mean, what the hell will ever break that? I mean, that's the thing. Like, I hear if she doesn't cut from Kai, she's never going to.
No. She's not.
So,
I got a question for you.
Yep.
And this is someone on Twitter. I don't have my phone in here with me right now, or else I would give them full credit. But someone on Twitter asked, why does Rudy Vincent have a different name than Kai and Winter Anderson?
I thought Vincent was his first name.
His name is Rudy Vincent.
Huh. He's a half brother?
Maybe.
Adopted? Are Kai and Winter both adopted?
I don't know. When they were hiding their parents' bodies, they seemed pretty blood-related to both of them.
True, true.
Maybe but he like, changed his name for the betterment of his practice.
That'd be an interesting idea, too. Yeah, I have no I didn't know. I did not know that they were had the different names. Because I thought it was Dr. Vincent last name, but then it seemed like people were calling him Vince and whatnot. Like, it was his first name this episode.
Maybe.
Anyway, chaos reigns. So now he turns to Bev and says, Samuel deserved better than a bullet through the head. And we have another flashback where there's an alternate reality where Winter is honoring her punishment. And then Bev comes and just shoots Samuel in the head and says, tell your brother he's next. And he asks, why did you betray me? And she goes, you betrayed me. Your sister's lying and making up shit. Your promises mean shit. You're fake. And the biggest mistake I made was believing in you. Turd. So there's the impact of the Valerie Solanas episode.
A cut to Ivy, who we know is Ivy in her mask, definitely hearing it and making note of it. So that's gonna be a thing next episode, hopefully.
Yeah, and Bev doesn't die. Kai says, death's too good for you. Take her to the isolation chamber. That will be interesting to see what they do to her in isolation chamber. And then he says, welcome to our newest member. Turns out Allie has been wearing the Bev clown face this whole time, and Allie and her do a breathy stare down where they just deeply breathe at each other.
Totally cured.
What are they thinking?
She doesn't have a problem with all these clowns or anything. Just over it.
What are they thinking? So that's the episode. That's the episode.
Okay.
Pretty
that was an
like
episode.
Anything to speculate on or
no,
anything
I think
to tease out? Should we get right to feedback?
In my opinion, this was the scariest episode this season.
Why?
Because when they went into that judgment house, my heart was just genuinely racing.
Okay.
It's
yeah,
very
that was
scary.
That was very macabre and scary. I guess it's like I said, I've been familiar with these type of things, and I thought they were just going to make a point about how weird, like, socially this all is. And, like, this is the whole, like, you know, two Americas thing. Like, imagine, like, one of those things in L.A. or something, or New York City. And, like, or, like, I was on the subreddit for American Horror Story, and it was so clear to, like, the people in, like, the South and Midwest are like, oh, yeah, those are fucking, you know, Christian haunted houses, and
right.
Like the people that are from the coast are like, Jesus fucking Christ, that's crazy. And everyone's like, yeah, kinda.
You're right.
Anyway, because that's the whole thing. Like, you know, grown ass men and women are not going through those houses. Teenagers are.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that who goes to haunted houses? Predominantly young people, and they're getting force-fed this shit.
Okay.
About, like, you know, the being gay is wrong and doing drugs is not fun, which is the biggest lie of them all. And, you know, like, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
The only thing I like
world.
Taking drugs, or the only thing I like doing more than taking drugs,
having an abortion.
Getting an abortion.
Yep. By a gay doctor. Who
a
wants,
gay woman doctor.
And you didn't pay a dime because you used socialized medicine.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Let's get the feedback. Okay. AHS at baldmove.com. Here's a couple of people who took advantage of that. Brian S., who you might better known as Texas Sandman from the forums. Just to follow up on last week's episode, was the only purpose of that whole storyline to give the cult ladies a reason to say turd?
Yeah, I think
you got it, Brian. I mean, surely something else will come around.
You
come
don't
around
use
this.
A perfectly good Francis Conroy on that little tiny bit of episode.
But what? It's not like I don't feel like Kai needed her help in anything.
Nope.
Where is the grand design in all this? I don't know. So he's got a few points. Hysterical Allie made a guest appearance early on, but lucky for us, it's a brief one. Shirley isn't so bad when she's able to use a more full range of emotions. Also, there has to be a double cross lined up right now, right? No way Allie has seriously joined the cult. No, I think Allie is in full on, I'm saving Oz at all costs, and I can only trust myself to do that mode. So I think we're going to be treated for a few weeks of her pretending to play that game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just feel like at the end is going to be her stabbing Ivy to death or something.
What if this helps them get back together?
Maybe Oz stabs Ivy to death. He's been training for it all season
Maybe
long.
Oz joins the cult.
Maybe Oz is the Messiah baby after all. Going back, because that was a long time theory of like, well, maybe Oz is Kai's secret love baby or sperm donor kind of situation or I don't know about all that.
Yeah, that's insane.
He continues, the Denim Militia must really have some clout, or the police force in Kaitan doesn't care about the gun laws. I'm pretty sure firearms are not allowed to be carried by unauthorized personnel in buildings where government business takes place, and dude bro number 34 is packing a gnarly-looking semi-automatic rifle. Oh, I forgot. The whole police force of one is in the cult. Yeah, I mean, but like I said in the beginning,
that
might be because I do think, didn't we figure out last season, or that's been confirmed that as the first few episodes are rolling out, they're still like filming and shooting like this late into the season.
I do not know that.
So I feel like that some of that stuff might have been a reaction to Charlottesville, because that's just like one more transgression. Like, you've got these people protesting, carrying guns and menacing citizens. What's going to stop them from showing up to an indoor rally? What's going to stop them from storming a council? You know, like.
Well, I mean, because you just can't carry weapons into a government building,
right? But if Kai is the head council member, and these are his private
and
security
the town's
force,
literal only police officer was sitting in the back of the room.
Yeah,
why not? Maybe they had an agreement that only one guy could have a gun because only one guy had a gun.
I got a justice boner when Lochte took one to the dome, but that was short-lived while Winter betrayed Beverly. Is she really that ride or die for Kai? Is there a secret plan that they're going to reveal at the 11th hour? Probably the former. I don't know. And I do think that she was really that ride or die for Kai, but if the death of Vincent doesn't bring her out of it, I don't know. But on the other hand, it's not like they portrayed her and Vincent of having this deep relationship. This is literally the first time they've shared the screen, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Not even her real brother.
They don't even have the same name.
Probably not. Only three more to go. Keep up the good work. And Aaron, you should smile more often. You're prettier when you smile.
Amen.
I'll try to smile through the pain. Tim B., I enjoyed this week's episode, but in my opinion, we are no longer in the horror realm. For me, AHS requires supernatural elements to be actually scary. You won't believe this, Tim, but that was one of my theses. It was one of my thesis for the Cinema Spooktacular, that for me, a horror movie's got to have a supernatural or monstrous element. Or, like, I can get tense, but I don't get the hair on the back of my neck feeling. And all this blood and gore at not once since, like, we got a whiff of Twisty has that kind of back of my hair. not since the ghost monster, you know, was confronted in the bathroom. That's the last time I felt like a hair on my back since sensation with American Horror Story. Remember that?
Yeah, dude, that
Occupied.
Was this season.
What was that sound it made? Like,
yeah.
Open a door. That was just the bathroom fan failing. This feels more like a Fox show with Kevin Bacon, The Following meets Fight Club. And how can you even find Evan Peters scary? Right?
Right.
I'm okay with it not being horror, as I'm still highly entertained. In fact, I've watched every episode of every season of AHS, and I'm always entertained. I guess that's what keeps me coming back. I also like knowing that each season is a short and a storyline will end with the season. Do you think there's any chance that they'll bring Supernatural into this cult season? We did have Twisty, but I assume those were all dream sequences or comic book short stories.
The thing about American Horror Story is that you have to appeal to everyone's different tastes. I mean, we obviously wouldn't be watching if every season so far has been based on the exact same, has been based on, like, Murder House, for example.
Right.
I mean, certainly hated that one the most. But, I mean, sometimes, like, real life madness is really scary. That's one of the things that I find personally are my biggest, like, horror triggers is just actual psychological madness.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, because I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in lake monsters. I don't believe in Frankenstein. That's not scary to me. What's scary to me is what's really out there.
See, and that's the thing. Like, I to your point, if you just did the supernatural stuff, you'd probably lose people like you that don't find that as scary.
Yeah.
Whereas me,
like, I can see the fishing line making that ghost move like Scooby-Doo, but
yeah. Like, if you can suspend my disbelief successfully and make me think for a moment that those boogeyman might be real, that's what's scary to me. The fact that, like, the foundations of how I see the universe being flipped over.
Right.
And oh shit, zombies are real. Oh my God, there's an actual demon possession.
Right. And
I love it because those things, like, when they really lean into, like, no one believes them because, of course, demons aren't real. Like, it's like that gets me going.
Right. But I mean, what's actually terrifying to me is there are assholes like this in their basement plotting how to kill and rape women and make people feel uncomfortable. There are private armed militias out there moving on campuses because they just don't like black people. It doesn't make any sense. But that's the real horror of the world we live in. Mm-hmm. And what's even more scary is, you know, the nature of satire, which I think we talked about in the first or second episode. But, you know, imagine being the kind of person watching the season that's like, yeah, that's a great idea. Maybe I should do that. This speaks to me as a person. Mm-hmm. Look how silly these fucking liberals are and how ridiculous they are when she freaks out and cries and puts armed bars on her windows.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Oh, I forgot. I've been waiting the rebut the whole time. I don't believe Ryan Murphy. I do think that what's actually going to happen is that Twisty is going to show up and put the kibosh on all this shit.
Okay.
And Twisty, I trust. Twisty is a good soul, and he is not going to like his visage being used for all this bullshit and not-to-tree. And fascism, and he's going to come and he's going to clean house. And I think they're even kind of hinting that with Kai, like, killing people with these shears that are very reminiscent of Twisty's killing shears.
Okay.
I think it's going to happen.
I'm not going to entertain this because when you get your heart broken, who's going to have to hold you?
Well, you know, next week is the Halloween episode. It'd be a great time for him to
come. On Halloween this year.
It'd be a great time for him, because that's the whole legend. He comes back with more Drake every fucking Halloween.
Yeah.
And possesses punishes the freaks.
Right.
Or actually saves the freaks.
Saves.
Yeah. Just they punish the shitholes.
Just a select few,
The assholes, yeah. So that's what I think. I do think there's going to be a paranormal thing coming back.
Halloween episode next week on Halloween itself.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally the Halloween episodes are usually like extra scary or even almost standalone. Like, I remember the Coven season, they had like out of nowhere, a zombie apocalypse kind of thing. And there's been other, like, you know, super creepy episodes around the Halloween. So I'm kind of excited to see what they come up with on Halloween proper. Alina Max says, frustrated. Seriously, the Bebe Valerie episode is complete filler. One, Beverly would have started revolt regardless of Bebe since Kai wasn't giving her her 50-50. Two, Winter would have shot Detective Ryan Lochte anyway because, you know, the whole attempted rape thing. And three, we're supposed to believe Kai is sober enough to orchestrate the inside men leads an uprising with Bebe but now wants to create an incest messiah child? Can we call it the Murphy curve when characters start acting nonsensically, like Allie being okay with causing and witnessing the gruesome death of innocent Dr. Vinny? P.S. They do more cutaways than the Family Guy. Damn it, Alina. I made that joke live watching the show. Like, I realize that this is like essentially when, you know, Quagmire says, remember that one time I did this? And then they just this dip over this random pop culture reference that lasts too long.
Right.
Like, it's the laziest way to tell a story.
Absolutely. And that's not to say that you can't use that device at key moments, but he is just way overused it. Like, just now getting to the beginning of the story, or last week we were getting to the beginning of the story. I don't know. Feels like he's lying to us.
It's the laziest way to tell a story, Seth MacFarlane. Jamie says, what the flying fuck was up with this planned conception scene? Did anyone literally laugh out loud? Raise my hand. Totally did.
Yep.
The most bonkers scene of this season to date, and it's poof positive that Kai is an off-the-wall lunatic. Sex to him is simply a transaction of power. His character is strange, but also weirdly original, and that I've never seen anyone like him on television. Oh, yeah, bringing up the sex as power theme that was kind of run through low-key
this
season. He fucks women, he fucks men interchangeably. No big deal. If sex gives him power, he's on board. Also, so glad we were spared from any incest. Yeah, that's because HBO didn't produce it. If HBO didn't produce it, it would have been all incest all the time.
You know what?
Surprising combinations of incest.
I can't help but thinking that, like, and you can cut this if you want to.
Marked. Noted.
But I can't help thinking that while they were having their Handmaid's Tale power exchange, that, you know, do you think Winter would, like, feel his ball slapping her? It's kind of like incest, right?
Well, maybe it'd be the two. It'd be like those, you know, that desk toy with the ball. It's a nice little kind of push pull thing going. Might be nice.
That was all I could think of the first time it appeared on screen. I was like
tippy tapping on the taint.
At the very least, his balls are touching her.
Yeah, that's my wife, guys. Also, Dr. Vincent, completely pointless. I understand how he wasn't involved. It makes no sense. Like, what is his life like? Is he a really bad therapist and we know nothing about his life? Every time we've seen him, he's in the office or at someone else's house. All we know is that he's horrible at his job and he's the older brother of Kai and Winter.
Right. It would have made more sense if he had come to Allie and just said, I messed up. You know, I helped him and now it's gone too far and I want to help you.
Yeah.
That would make more sense than to try to tell me that you weren't in on it, especially with the weird, stilted conversation you had on the phone while you were playing with those buttons.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, the whole Watchmen smiley face button stuff. And then the fact that, like, he's the progenitor of the Pinky Power. And, like, they had all these red herrings that they put to make us believe that. And then just pulled the rug out from underneath us.
A few years ago, 15, 20. Not that long, but there was a Scooby-Doo cartoon that was revived for a younger generation to make it interesting again. I think it was called Scooby-Doo Kids. They were all teenagers. Do you remember this?
No.
There was a character that was literally named Red Herring, and he would always show up at once throughout the episode and give them a red herring. That's who Dr. Rudy Vincent is.
Every episode? Why did why didn't the gang say, get the fuck out of here, man? We don't want your red herring.
Because you got to have a red herring.
Plus, kids don't understand the concept of red herring. That's like something for the adults.
No, I definitely didn't get it at the time. He was just a kid named Red Herring, and he had red hair. So I was like, oh, that's why they call him that.
Interesting. It's like we didn't understand that Pepe Le Pew is just going around repeatedly sexually assaulting this poor cat.
Right, exactly.
We didn't understand as kids. We didn't get to like
the whole terror.
Yeah.
He just had to keep trying. He'd get her eventually.
He's so passionate.
Yeah.
It's a compliment.
He loves her.
Why can't
she
get the fact that he's just trying to pay her a compliment?
Right.
Amanda S. Okay, this I love you, Amanda. But this is a crazy theory, and it's at the end of the episode. And anytime people want to slam the door shut on a podcast, it's totes okay because the things are going to get a little crazy.
I thought it's also
pretty cool.
Okay.
So I just want to get that out. Like, this is the last email. If it gets too much in the weeds, I will not hate you for dipping out and going to check out our cinematic spooktacular.
No, stay till the end of the podcast and then listen to the other one.
No, okay, it's your choice. Your choice. She goes, through my years of commitment to AHS, I've also looked for the elusive thread.
She's gone way too far.
I looked for the elusive thread that connects the seasons, as Murphy has alluded to in his many interviews. I know this is a long email, but I've never given feedback before, and I've happened to be listening to the Embedded podcast by NPR.
So wait, you started her first feedback by shitting all over her?
I didn't shit all over. I'm just saying this goes deep and gets crazy.
All right.
So
I'm into it.
In which they reference a sour real estate deal between Donald Trump and the New York area of Briarcliff Manor. The name struck a chord, and after some digging, I'm 100 feet down a tinfoil rabbit hole. Ryan Murphy may have been trolling Donald Trump with his super real estate failures over 6 years. If not true, it's at least super entertaining. Let me know what you think. Season 1, Murder House. Release date 10/5/2011. Casting writing announcements in early 2011. It's set in L.A. Trump had multiple failed projects planned for L.A. and Southern California from 1980s to 2000s, including purchasing a golf course at Rancho Palo Verde that had been partially destroyed by a landslide and became a money pit for Trump. It also included fights with the local government and a lawsuit between Trump and the homeowners. 2011 is also the year the Obama roasted Trump at the White House Correspondents' Dinner 4/30/2011 that many regard as the reason he decided to take on Washington. Season 2, Asylum. Release date 10/17/2012. Set in Briarcliff Manor Asylum. Briarcliff Manor is also the location of a Trump golf course in which a real estate developer claimed Trump almost destroyed his business with shady terms for the project. And she cites articles. Like, this is a full-on Carrie Masterson from fucking Homeland yarn board that she's woven in this email. It's awesome.
This is Charlie in the mailroom, yes, and Always Sunny, yes, smoking a cigarette.
Yes, there's all these. She like backs this shit up. These are facts. Fact 3, Season 3, Coven, release date 10/9/2013. I think that's a typo. 2013, set in Nolens. In 2005, Trump announces the building of a hotel location in downtown Nolens due to the downturn of the national economy. The project is never completed. In 2011, Trump sells the property for a loss. Season 4, Freak Show, release date 10/8/2014, the year that American Horror Story got awesome. Because we started covering it.
Okay.
Set in Juniper, Florida. In 2013, a federal lawsuit was filed regarding Trump's Jupiter, Florida golf resort and its purchase from the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, my God.
Season 5, Hotel, release date 10/7/2005. Aside from the obvious naming of the season, Hotel California played in Episode 1 and an obvious inspiration for the rest of the season. Donald Trump attempted to buy the Beverly Hills Hotel in 1980s and failed, but mentioned it was one of his favorite places to visit. Many equate Hotel California with the Beverly Hills Hotel, and while the season is supposedly based in the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles, there's an obvious connection. Season 6, Roanoke. Release date 9/14/2016, set in Roanoke, North Carolina. After announcing his presidency, Trump focuses heavily on Virginia, visiting Roanoke many times over the course of his campaign. Trump pitches a fit about a lack of air conditioning in Hotel Roanoke and his one visit gaining national scrutiny. Season 7, Cult, release date now, set in Michigan. Obvious connection to Flint crisis. Trump won Michigan by fewer than 11,000 votes. And Clown Crisis in Detroit, likening to Trump's appearance. I didn't get that one. She leaked linked the Free Republic, and I'm leaving that link blue. So this is either conspiracy that Ryan Murphy is using to roast Trump over low these many years, or Trump is just a really bad businessman with a lot of failed real estate deals. Well, spread all over the country.
That's true.
So,
I mean, you could pick probably any city. And
now he's the leader of the free world.
But I did just get confirmation via Ryan Murphy's Twitter that next season's going to be called Russian Horror Story. So it seems to tie it up in a neat little bow there, Amanda.
Is that true?
No.
Okay. Because I'm like, oh,
you
my
see
God.
Me not looking at anything.
Well, no, I was engrossed. I was tracking the yarn through all these different, like, you know, connections with Amanda.
Ah, Well, I mean, that's great research. Thank you for doing that.
Yes.
Try to send it to Ryan Murphy or post it on Twitter or something.
Take that shit.
Definitely get some traction.
Take that shit to Reddit.
But I think it's just giving Donald Trump a little more credit than he deserves for one very talented, creative man to spend an entire series run of a show devoted to Donald Trump.
I don't buy it because... The fact is, Donald Trump hasn't been able to get credit for like 10 years. That's why he got in bed with the Russians. No listing in the credit you're referring to. Okay. All jokes aside, sob. This is all very real and sad.
Jesus Christ.
AHS at baldmove.com if you'd like to send me more Charlie work, Charlie day, yarn boards.
Yep.
Love it. You can also go to forums, forums.baldmove.com to discuss it with their fans in a weekly thread. We're also on all the social medias. Check out our Cinema Spooktacular and all the other stuff we do at baldmove.com.
Mm-hmm.
Until next week when we're back for the super exciting, spooky Halloween
episode. Halloween Spooktacular.
I am Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
See you next week.